Hello, and welcome to What's My Tagline? I'm your host, Carol Flagg. Thanks for tuning in. On this show, we put our microphone in front of a variety of industry experts to understand the factors influencing messaging, branding, and reputation in healthcare. You can follow the conversation on Twitter at hashtag What's My Tagline and follow me at Carol Flagg. My guest today is Marianne O'Hare, producer of Conversations on Healthcare, a weekly radio show focused on advancing the conversation on healthcare policy, healthcare reform, and topics related to transforming healthcare for the 21st century. Marianne has a storied career in media relations, graphic design, the entertainment industry, and more. She's here today to talk about that career and her latest passion in working with, as she says, the rock stars in healthcare's upper echelons. Marianne, thanks so much for joining me today.
Carol, it's so great to join you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to this conversation for quite a while. Finally, our schedules kind of align like the stars.
It's been a little crazy, a little nutty, but yes, indeed, it does feel that way. And I love your show, and I love that you get to have these long conversations with really interesting people. Not that I'm, you know, doubting that in myself, but it's a really fun show to listen to.
Oh, good. And we also, I actually just found out a little while ago that we actually both celebrated birthdays recently. So we have that in common as well. Speaking of the stars aligning and all that, I think we're fellow Libras, if I know my astrological signs pretty
well. Yes, we are. And someone once described me after looking at my chart as having 2 feet firmly planted in the air, which I thought was an interesting observation.
Constellation, which is, you know, balance. Yeah.
And Libra is an air sign, so that's part of that. But my significant other actually has the same birthday. So, Yeah.
Wow, that does not happen very often.
No, it doesn't. So we don't forget our birthdays. Although sometimes you might want to.
You may want to, exactly, depending on the number. So before we start talking about you and your career and how you became the producer of Conversations on Healthcare, my first question to all my guests, if you had to describe yourself as a tagline, what would it be?
Well, actually, I have two. One of them is my family motto that goes back to my very eccentric, very elegant, very fabulous former New York business owner grandmother. And her phrase was, and it's a family motto, is always go to the party.
Oh!
Yeah.
Don't turn
an invitation down. If you're feeling like you're not looking your best, just put on a brighter shade of lipstick and go, because you just never know. Never know who you're going to meet, who you're going to run into, how it's going to transform your life. Always go to the party.
Wow. Fabulous. And what's your second
one? And the second one is, don't be afraid to turn left.
Okay. So I understand the first one. Tell me about the my husband's a lefty. So tell me about the second one.
It's about serendipity. It's about taking wrong turns. It's about trying to get to one destination and something trips you up and you get skewed in a completely different direction. And what happens after that accident is often magical. So taking left turns is about opening yourself up to the possibilities and not being attached to the outcome. And sometimes it's the truest course that you should be on. And it's happened to me so many times in my lifetime that I trust it intuitively. I don't doubt it. If I get held up on the way to a meeting, or if something doesn't come through the way I'd hoped and I have to grab onto something else while still in motion, it pulls me into an unexpected opportunity. So, I mean, that's been throughout my life. I'd like to say that I've lived my life linearly, but I really haven't. I'm not wired that way. I mastered my ADHD before it had a term, it had a name. And luckily, I was able to make my living in the creative arts for a long time. So it lent itself to opening myself up to being and becoming different voices, different personalities, different things required for whatever that moment required. But it also taught me flexibility and being adaptive and whatever. So don't be afraid to turn left. There's probably something really great around that corner you weren't heading for.
It sounds like you're a lot like your grandmother, because that left turn could take you to a new party.
She was, I have to say, my mother and my aunt are identical twins. They're going to be 86, and they grew up in the storied days of upscale Brooklyn in the 40s and 50s. And my grandfather had a law firm on Wall Street, but my grandmother was really interesting. She inherited, her father died when she was very young, and he had a big printing business, and her older sisters were already on the track in college and university, and so she learned the family business with her mother and took the business over at a very young age. and did all the playbills for Broadway and the circulars for Bonwit, Teller, and Bergdorf Goodman. So, right, so she was in these really wild, rarefied circles, and my grandfather represented a lot of Tammany Hall politicians. He also was involved in the Bridge of Spies, Russian spy case he handled. So, and they were best friends with the owners of the Dodgers. Jackie Robinson had dinner at their dinner table. I mean, the stories are just off the charts. And I want to try to capture as many of them as I can, because they really capture an era when being an Irish Catholic, you didn't get into the upper echelons of power very easily, But my grandfather was universally beloved. He had both Republican and Democratic stalwarts that he supported, and he was one of the only Democrats that was invited to join the Republican Club, and this is back in the day. So anyway, so the stories, I guess we're a family of stories and storytelling, and that's something that has imbued my entire life with, you know, a love of adventure and a love of story.
Well, talking about stories, I think it's fair to say that your path to healthcare was not the shortest distance between A and B, but the circuitous route to healthcare. So
I'll say.
Yeah. A little bit that I know, right? So this question of how you got into healthcare is a story that I've heard from you and is a fascinating one. And so let's start with that. Like, how you ended up being the producer of Conversations on Healthcare?
Well, I mean, I guess starting at the beginning is a good place to start. When I was in high school, I went to, even before that, I participated in middle school that I organized and tried to get other people to participate in an anti-war demonstration against the Vietnam War after Kent State happened. I knew there was a protest at the high school. I thought, I'm going to be the protest leader in the middle school. Well, I managed to get one other person to get out of their seat, but I was the only one that marched out to the hallway and down the hall. And basically, after that, was sent to the all-girls school by my parents, thinking that that would straighten me out. And actually, in some ways, it really did, because you didn't have to dumb down. You were lauded for being smart and doing well. But we also had to do a tremendous amount of community service. So I went to the head nun and I said, "Sister, I think I could make a great difference working in radio." I didn't tell her what difference.
Yeah.
And I was a junior in high school, and I called the local rock station. They said, "Sure, man, come on down." And I showed up in my uniform and my long blonde hair, and they said, "Okay, you are hired." And
hair.
it was moxie, but it was also probably the uniform and the long blonde hair. But anyway, but they were cool. They were great. They were never they were always above board and professional. And they called me the kid. And they actually gave me a job that I had to, this is before computers, you had to research record sales to help build a playlist. Everything was done very organically back then. So I literally had a list of 20 record stores, which there were at least that many back then, in my community of Rochester, New York. And I called them all every week, same guy, same person. They told me the top 20 records and how they were selling. And we would sit down, I'd sit down with the program director, and we would put together a playlist, you know. And anytime a band would come to town, which was frequent in those days, again, so organic, the whole business was so organic back then. They would stop at the radio station, and tour bus would pull up in front of the radio station for live interviews. So I started, I mean, every other week it was Ozzy Osbourne, and I'll quote him, "I like the uniform."
And actually, the real Ozzy wouldn't quite understand it that clearly, but that's really good.
And I'm like, and all of a sudden I hear behind him barking, "Ozzy, hands off the schoolgirl." But anyway, it was very funny. And so all these bands would come, and I learned how to comport myself. You know, I'd bring them water, I'd bring them drinks, I'd bring them into the studio. Sometimes they'd invite me to stay and do the interview, like join the interview. And I, especially if it was like America or a band that I, at the time I really liked, you know, Eric Carmen, the Raspberries, all kinds of bands. And then I would go backstage to these shows. So I got indoctrinated into, wow, this is the radio business. I never really thought about it, or was really that compelled to do it. I just wanted to do something interesting and fun. And then that led to, I worked at a local TV station in my senior year in high school, continued at the radio station, worked at the TV station. So I just kind of eased into it that way. And then when I got to Syracuse, all my compatriots at school there were at Newhouse, were, you know, one kid's dad was the president of CBS Records. Another kid's dad was John Dancy, the anchorman. Another, you know, everybody had like credentials and connections. So I thought, I better get my own. So I after my sophomore year, I said, I'm going to be a page at NBC. So I got on a train. Oh. I went to New York, talked my way into NBC with no appointment. I mean, again, those days are so organic. And so, I mean, if you had a little bit of moxie, you could really do anything. But I ended up riding home on the train back to Westport, where my cousins lived, sitting next to somebody who spoke French. And so I was a French minor in college, and I spoke French with him all the way back. And he goes, you know, your French is really good. You should apply at the UN. So I said, okay. So I applied at the UN. I came in for an exam, and they hired me after my sophomore year. So I took some time off from school and worked at the UN in New York.
Why not?
Because, was anyone thinking? I was like less than half the age of everybody else I worked with, but it was such a cool experience. I mean, Andrew Young was the ambassador then, and I mean, I was literally at the table at the General Assembly meetings, and I mean, it was unbelievable. And so when I went back to school, I really focused, turned my attentions more towards journalism. I thought wanted to be a foreign correspondent. That didn't work out. And anyway, ended up stumbling into radio while waiting for a TV gig to happen. And that again speaks to that don't be afraid to turn left. Like, I was so insistent I was going to get a TV gig somewhere. Well, I didn't. And so I thought, well, I'll do radio for a while. And it was straight up news. And that kind of launched me into this odyssey, literally, of unexpected twists and turns. One thing about journalism that anybody who's in the business knows, I think it's much more highly specialized now. People focus on one subject matter out of the gate pretty quickly. But you have to be a specialist and a generalist at the same time. And you have to be able to write and concisely and disseminate information about different topics all the time. And I think it's some of the best training in the world. I think it's just, and honestly, I mean, I'd go from, like, literally going from a city council meeting to a mob hit, you know, with blood spilling down the street. I never knew what was going to happen. And then I had to report about it. So, I think the best way to describe that whole experience of radio is it's really a backstage pass to the world. You have all these reasons and excuses to go into areas that people only observe from the outside. So, that launched me into a radio career decades ago. And I could keep going on, but I inadvertently, I didn't know what I was going to do with my career. I didn't know where I was headed, because I'd moved to Connecticut for a morning show. I was stringing for ABC Radio Network quite a bit, covering stories for them. And I thought, I just want to go to New York. But then I met someone and got married and ended up putting roots down in Connecticut. So that changed my trajectory. And then I ended up having a baby, and that changed my trajectory. And I was hired by a network that's regionally based but syndicates nationally to be their arts and entertainment reporter. And for 15 years, I just interviewed rock stars and artists and playwrights for a living. So that was pretty awesome.
Not a bad gig.
Beatles and Rolling Stones and Monkees and Who. And I interviewed Roger Daltrey in a Speedo, blue Speedo bathing suit on a beach in Nevis. I'm just trying to give you the visual. Like, what girl who grew up in the 70s wouldn't fantasize about that experience? And I'm like, what am I doing? This is crazy.
That's funny.
Yeah. So anyway, you know, crazy experiences like that. And, like, I'm not a groupie, but I would do anything for Pat Metheny or for a lock of his hair or anything. You know what I mean? Like, there are people that I love musically, but I just got to meet all the big names because I had, that was my job. And that was a lot of fun. And that was back when radio still paid a living wage, which it doesn't really do now. So
it's quite different. Yes.
Yes, which brings us to your platform, which is so exciting because people are trying to figure out this new digital media podcast world, and the remonetization of the industry is going to take some clever thinking by people like you.
Yeah. Oh, well, I I don't know if anybody ever really calls me clever. I think that I'm somebody that, like, I'll take a bunch of mud and really do throw it on the wall. And if 5% of it sticks, I feel very, very, very fortunate. Yeah. Yeah. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to What's My Tagline. And my guest today is Marianne O'Hare, producer of Conversations in Healthcare. So you're in Connecticut. You have this storied career in radio, storied, I think, and then you end up becoming the producer of Conversations on Healthcare. And I'd love to hear how that happened. And I also want to point out that I love what you, I think I pulled this from your LinkedIn profile, that you have this passion for working as what you call the rock stars in healthcare's upper echelons. Mm-hmm. What that means. Tell us mm-hmm. about that.
Well, and again, because I had this prolific rock star background, and one thing you learn at that level of the height of any success in any art form or any industry is that there are often highly creative people with an amazing work ethic and an amazing ability to envision things and then create them. And that's rock stars across any area. And, you know, just talking about the radio industry, just after 9/11, I had been doing commercial work and voiceovers in New York as well. I did Priceline.com with William Shatner and other, you know, I've done thousands of voiceovers as well. It's like my idiot savant way to make a living. But so I had a ton of work going on in New York, and I was back and forth from Connecticut quite a bit. But then the industry slowly started to change. 9/11 was the first clunk down, and then the rise of digital media, and then the Clinton administration's FCC regulations changed, where you could only own two radio stations in a market, and now you could own as many as you could buy. So the oligopolies sprang up all over, and mom and pops went away. So all the stations that used to carry my entertainment report got gobbled up by the big companies. So my economic reality changed dramatically after 9/11. And, you know, as the radio industry devolved, I ended up, you know, selling handbags and selling signs and trying to keep my kid in college. You know what I mean? I was doing whatever I could do in the interim. And then because I had a journalistic background, a friend of mine was doing publicity in New York, and I started working with her doing book tours and publicity for, you know, people like Jack Klugman and Chris Lemon, who was Jack Lemon's son. And I made a lot of great contacts, and I started doing some work for HBO in PR. So that's how I stumbled into PR out of absolute necessity, and that was a completely extreme left turn. But it brought me to this whole new skill set that I hadn't had before, which was really, really exciting. And I was able to do it with people that are pretty highly placed, a lot of the big publishers, publishing houses and whatnot. So that kind of got me through the 70s. And then, you know, I was surviving, but I was trying to figure out how to thrive. And this friend called me out of the blue, and he said, I used to do a lot of production work with him. And he goes, you want to produce a healthcare show? And I'm like, okay, how hard can that be?
How hard can that be? You know,
I knew nothing.
Right, especially radio is going down the tubes. How hard could that be?
I mean, I had no business doing this. And I mean, and fortunately, I mean, I have some skills that I was able to tap into, but man, this was really, and I still say to this day, this is the hardest I've ever worked in my life. I've never worked this hard because there was so much complexity to health policy, to the health industry, mm-hmm. American healthcare. The greatest minds can't figure it out and are trying to figure it out. And my job was to book the greatest minds in the industry every week. And my hosts run a large FQHC, Federally yes. Qualified Health Center organization. So they're not radio people. So I had to write every word they said. Like, I scripted the entire thing. And I had done live radio my whole life, or read off a script, or I was the talent. Now here I was writing an interview that somebody else was going to read. Hence the hardest work I've ever done. And, you know, Dr. Don Berwick and Eric Topol, and I mean, like,
those are rock stars,
and every week someone like that, and just booking them alone is like a logistical challenge. And then anyway, but I started to learn the vernacular, and I started to go to conferences and get more context and do a ton of reading. And every week I am pushed to my great challenge of trying to make it sound like I understand it, number one, that they know what they're talking about, number two, and number three, that the guest isn't completely mortified by my lack of preparation. So, it's a triple whammy. But I think it's been just such an unexpected joy at this juncture in a very ersatz devil may care career that I've come to this place where the subject matter is so important.
It's very serious, and it
affects us all. And my hosts, who are just terrific, Mark Maselli and Margaret Flinter, they run Community Health Center, Inc. in Connecticut, and they've spread their footprint nationally. They've launched a brand new medical assistant training institute that's like a fifth of the cost of what the trade schools charge. It's a team-based model of care. We've got classes going now in Hawaii and New Mexico and Colorado, and we do these very important Project Echoes for very hard-strapped primary care clinicians who are in low-resource areas, whether it's rural or overburdened in urban areas. And many of them don't have time to really become specialists in things like opioid addiction management or LGBT issues or anything that, things that affect largely the underserved population. And so they're thought leaders in their own right in their area of expertise of primary care delivery. Margaret Flinter started the first nurse practitioner residency program in the country because she saw that nurse practitioners would be a vital, vital, important tool in filling the gap in primary care. So they're just both off the chart. So I get to work with some really smart, really amazing people, which also makes it really joyful.
It's so interesting that, you spent most of your career really, really in radio and seeing, of course, the changes brought on by, you mentioned the FCC, and now we've got the iHeart Radios today, which is really a clear channel, and many, many, mm-hmm. You can own as many stations you want, like you said, and now this digital footprint, this rise of online or internet radio because of smart speakers and the plug and play aspect in your car. But at the end of the day, radio has been around for many decades, right? So it's obviously it's come in a lot of different forms, and just like anything else, technology has changed the packaging of it. But I think I know what I love about radio. What do you see as the power of radio? How has it impacted you, and how does it impact what you do today?
Well, I think that the total immersion of it, and I was actually just watching an old movie on TCM, Turner Classic Movies, yesterday, and it was a Weekend at the Waldorf, and somebody was extolling the virtues of how great it would be just to sit around and listen to whatever you want to listen to on the radio. Now, of course, that was from the 40s, and things have changed. But I thought to myself, that was the epitome of like entertaining yourself. But more than that, I, as a kid, and this is like, I know this is very geeky, but I used to lie in bed with my transistor radio, and I would listen to CBS Mystery Theater at night, and that would be the proverbial my mother coming in saying, turn that thing off, it's 10 o'clock, whatever, but I would hide under my covers listening to that, because the theater of the mind is what radio is so good at, and we're all so busy, we're all so on the go right now, and I drive 120 miles a day to go from my house in Stonington,
wow.
Connecticut. Yeah, I know, it's crazy. It's crazy. Well, that's another story for another day. We'll have to figure that one out. But anyway, so I'm in my car a lot. And my listening habits since the recent election have reflected sort of my own personal zeitgeist and that of the nation, which is I can't even listen to NPR anymore sometimes, which I'm an NPR junkie, because mm-hmm. I just can't be constantly reminded of what's being undone. What's right. Like the progress that was made in healthcare, moving healthcare forward? Was it messy? Was it clunky? Did it need fixing? Absolutely. Every one of our experts who were part of building the Affordable Care Act agreed that it needed to be worked on and fixed. But watching the dismantling of all that work that went into making healthcare more accessible to more Americans, that breaks my heart. And the environment and education and our international standing. I worked at the UN, the recent events at the UN. I was in the floor during the opening of the General Assembly, physically there, and I know how august that experience is, and that broke my heart. So I'm trying to leverage too much information with I have discovered that college radio is like the old school radio. Like, you can hear some of the unexpected, wonderful music. I mean, and I do listen to podcasts and things while I'm driving, and I try to keep my French up, and I try to learn other languages with like Duolingo while I'm driving, you know. But the radio remains that companion when you're on the go, when you're on the move. And I've looked at recent data, and it appears that, you know, radio listening, I mean, if you look at like Talkers Magazine and other magazines that follow the industry, Radio Inc. is another one, you know, the numbers are still pretty darn good for who's listening. It's just become a polarized kind of programming, which I feel is unfortunate, because people aren't reading newspapers anymore. So this is where they're getting their information. And I think that's one of the reasons we're seeing this great divide in our country. And I'd love to figure out a way to bring us back to sort of the sanity, if we could. Yeah. But radio, you know, I hear great music, unexpected music. I'm not just playing my own playlist to give myself a continuous loop. There's one show that I love listening to, Cliff Fernault on WPKN in Connecticut. You can get it internationally, and he plays, it's a 3-hour world music show. And I said, it's the only radio show you can listen to where you're singing along to a song you've never heard in a language you've never spoken. But the but the music is so good. So the bottom line is, radio is immediate. It's theater of the mind. It's a personal relationship that you develop with the announcers, with you know, the information that you can rely on. And, you know, I'm still very intimately connected to it. And actually, we just, you know, joining your platform has been great, because I just looking at the lineup of everybody else that you have, there's some really, really terrific, influential people in the industry that I get to rub, you know, virtual elbows with. So it's kind of fun.
Yeah. Yeah. So for our listening audience, we actually are syndicating Conversations on Healthcare on our Healthcare Now radio station, which we're very excited about that. Marianne, believe it or not, we are all out of time. I know. That half hour goes by so fast. And I offline, though, I want to find out what your next left turn is going to be, if you know what that is.
I'm not sure. I'll let you know when I turn.
Yeah, let me know. You can learn more about Marianne and Conversations in Healthcare at www.chcradio.com. Be sure to follow the show on Twitter at chcradio. You can share your thoughts and comments on Twitter at hashtag What's My Tagline, or visit the program page on healthcarenowradio.com. Have a topic related to our show you want to hear about, or you an expert who'd like to be on the show, reach out to me on Twitter at Carol Flagg, or email me at carol@healthcarenotradio.com. Until next time, I'm Carol Flagg, and I want to know, what's your tagline?